This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With eight delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product. With amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.
Our next partner has a product I use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a simple all-in-one solution as opposed to the ever-changing variety of supplements I have been taking for as long as I can remember. Sometimes up to three ramekins a day full of pills and powders trying to find the right formula for peak performance. Now that I've been taking Athletic Greens for a few months, I love it and I will never go back. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. I take one scoop in the morning on an empty stomach, and an additional one in the evening when I am feeling run down. I've seen such a difference in my own performance that I recently ordered additional AG1 for the rest of my family to use. It costs you less than $3 a day, you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit and supports better sleep quality and recovery in addition to mental clarity and alertness. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/contacts. Again, this is athleticgreens.com/contacts to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein.
Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Walt White, head baseball coach at Cal State Monterey Bay. Coach, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
If you don't mind taking us through your background as a coach to help ground the audience, how did you end up coaching? What was the process of landing your first job and then any subsequent jobs that you've had along the way?
Yeah. So I don't know. It's been an interesting story. Obviously, baseball's always been a passion of mine, and I don't want to sound too corny. In some regards, I feel like it's really saved me. But getting into high school, like I remember my high school coach, Doug Worley, really good high school coach at Saugus High School, said I argued everything and I should be a lawyer. So I argued that point quite a bit. So I think when I first went to Sonoma State and choosing my first major, I had no idea what I really wanted to do. I thought, I remember Coach Worley saying I should be a lawyer. Lawyers make pretty good money. Let's take a degree path towards something like that. My original major going into college was political science. And to be honest with you, I had no idea what I was getting into. When I went in, I was a political science major for a full year. I was in those classes. It was the first time in my whole academic career that I felt inferior. I was in roundtable discussions talking about the civil war in Yugoslavia. And at 20, 21 years old, I was watching SportsCenter at night. I wasn't watching world news. And so, like I said, just didn't feel right to me. And after talking to some other students and getting an idea of where their degree aspirations were, I just started making a change, thinking like, you know what, let's not focus on what I could potentially make in terms of money somewhere down the road. Let's find something that I really enjoy and I'm passionate about. And I was always a really good student. And it just, for that year, being a political science major, it wasn't fun. So I changed my major to kinesiology. All of a sudden, I was back into classes with my peers. I started finding those same leadership characteristics that I had early on. And then the subject matter was just really relatable, right? Everything I was doing. That's about the time where I started thinking about thoughts of potentially coaching. But at the time, I was still playing and excited about that. But I do remember having a class on within kinesiology. It was a theory of coaching class. And I remember not agreeing with everything in that class. And I just thought there were some thoughts that I had that maybe I could expand on sometime later on. Make a long story longer, finished my playing career at Sonoma. I played the 2 years after junior college, and I was really fortunate that I was drafted by the Florida Marlins, and I got to start my pro career. But at the same time, I still had, with changing my major, I had an extra year of school added on. I changed each offseason. I was planning on coming back to finish my degree, and I really wasn't thinking about coaching, but the head coach at Sonoma State, John Geltz, who is huge inspiration and huge influence in my career, asked me, said, "Hey, Walt, you mind taking our infielders for a day?" And I joke around saying it was the worst mistake he ever made because he couldn't get rid of me. And so each offseason, I'd finish my season in professional baseball and I'd come back. And it did get to a point where I had one class that I had left to finish, and the instructor would not allow me to show up late in the semester, or in the spring semester, I was leaving early. So I had to wait until I was done with my career to actually finish my last class. So I played 8 years professionally, reached a pretty decent level and had great experience and loved everything about it. But at the same time, I was getting a taste of coaching. And so when I finally finished my playing career, my last year was 2001, just so happened when I came back, the paid assistant at the time was a guy named Matt Markovich, who's currently now the athletic director at Santa Rosa Junior College. When I came back that year, Matt Markovich interviewed for the San Francisco State head job. That opened up. He got that position, opened up the head position at Sonoma. So I was able to take his kinesiology courses that he was teaching. They gave me those activity courses, and I became the full-time assistant. And yeah, I'm really glad I did, and I'm really glad I was able to hook on at Sonoma State with Coach Geltz, because he definitely shaped some of my thoughts and philosophies about what we do. Now, obviously, I think every coach needs to infuse their own personality and their own style and do the things that they really believe are going to be best suited for their personality and their program, but I like to think I'm a combination of every really good coach that I ever played for or been around. And to be honest, even some of the coaches that maybe I didn't have a fondness for playing for, but I think I was able to take some things from all those people and apply it to our philosophy and apply it to my coaching style. That's in a nutshell my start. And ultimately, this was my first head coaching position. I had interviewed at a handful of others, or one or two other spots prior to this, and I think all those things really helped me for this interview and taking this position here. So it's my journey there.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And if you could humor me because of the season you just had, what year are you in at Cal State Monterey? And talk briefly about what you were able to accomplish this year, just so we can put a pin in who we're talking to.
Okay. Just finished my 13th year here at CSUMB. I like to think it's been 12 or 11 and a half seasons based on COVID. We did not get to play in 2021. Our season was cut short in 20, obviously. But my 13th year here, I think that we've made steps every year. I don't know how much you know about the history of our program, but I took over a program that was 8-41 before we got here. So coming into this position, I was really excited about the job, thinking that I get to build, you know, this program with building of the school. And to be honest, was young coming in at the time, so I didn't know what being a head coach was like. But we've had a little bit of success moving forward. This last year, we won our fourth regular season conference championship. We've won three of the last four conference championships dating back to 18. So we won it in 18, came in second in 19, 20 and 21. We didn't have one, and then we won it in 22, and obviously we won it here this last year. But we took some more steps forward. We won the conference tournament championship, which we hadn't done. We've been the number one seed a few times, but we hadn't played our best in the playoffs, and afforded us an opportunity to host our first round of the regional championship. And we hosted Point Loma, who was the runner-up to the national championship last year, and Cal Poly Pomona, which has given us some hard times in the playoffs in the past. And we were able to beat both those teams and win our regional that we hosted. And we were able to host the super regional here, which another first. Unfortunately, we didn't play as well as we played the week before, and we got knocked out by Cal State San Bernardino, who was just frustrating. But you beat them in the regular season where we're the regular season champion. We beat them in the conference tournament to win the conference tournament championship, but you give a team a third life, and they played a little bit better than we did on that last weekend, and they're sitting in Cary, North Carolina playing where we're going to keep showing up, and at some point we'll be there.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And I have a ton of questions now going back to a variety of things that you said. And I'm going to start with something that's a little bit of an outlier for me on these shows, but your professional career. What I'm curious about is the difference between the pro level, especially the minor league system in baseball, which is so different from every other sport, and college athletics, because a lot of baseball athletes are put in a position where they get drafted or they got to go to college. But what would you say is the benefit of one versus the other? And what did you learn living that pro life that has translated to your coaching career and what you've tried to bring back to the collegiate environment?
Yeah, there's a lot there to unpack. I think that it's like I tell our team, the best baseball you're ever going to play and the most meaningful baseball you're ever going to play is right here in college. I think that the professional game, it truly is a job, and it's something that everyone aspires to get to because it's the best baseball in the world. And obviously getting to the big leagues would be the greatest accomplishment for any individual baseball player. However, it does change when you become a pro and there's money involved. And I think especially going through the minor leagues, what people don't really realize is wins and losses aren't important in the minor leagues, at least for the individual. They don't feel that way. The emphasis isn't on winning in the minor leagues. The emphasis is on getting people to the big leagues and earning that paycheck and getting a contract. So there's a lot of selfishness throughout. I'm not trying to be negative about it. It's not selfishly in a negative way, but it's selfish in a realistic way, right? When you're talking about millions of potential dollars out there, as a position player, you could go 5-for-5 and your team loses 10-2. You're in the clubhouse with a smile on your face. You're happy. You're a step closer to the big leagues, where in college baseball, you go 5-for-5 and your team loses 10-2. You don't have a smile on your face. And you needed to make another play on defense, or you need to do something to help your team win. The collective effort and the collective meaning for everybody is so different in college athletics. I also think there's more of an opportunity to develop relationships that are long lasting within a college atmosphere compared to professional baseball. People are moving in and out. Your rights are sold left and right. And I was traded throughout my career. I went from the Marlins to the Diamondbacks 5 years into my career, and you start all over again. And now, with all that said, you make new relationships and you have those things. But I could tell you, yes, I have some good relationships through professional baseball that people I still keep in contact with, and they're close friends. Some of my best friends and some of the people that I would trust with anything in my life are people that I went to college with and played on those teams with. So now, from a coaching standpoint and bringing it back to this level, I think there's a lot of great baseball players that have played at a high level that aren't very good coaches. And there's some really great coaches that haven't played at a high level. So I don't think being an ex-pro gives me any more credibility than anybody else coaching. I think what it does, if there is a benefit, the benefit is a relatability to the people that you're coaching. Now, with that said, that's all fading if you don't know how to communicate and you can't build trusting relationships with your players. Then you're just a ex-pro that thinks he has his, that his prep don't stink. And I think the whole idea is to, yes, use that relatability factor within the, from having that professional experience, but still go back to the golden rule of treat people the way they would like to be treated and have some mutual respect and bring players closer to you so you could really coach the heck out of them. And so I don't know if that answered the question a little. That's where we're at there.
No, that's a great answer. And my follow-up is now going to bring us back to you landing as a first-time head coach in regards to what is it that you realized right away that you needed to figure out. And you took over 8-41, and now you guys are winning super regionals or hosting super regionals. What does success look like? So it's a two-part question, but what did you realize right away that you weren't prepared for and you had to figure out? But then also, what have you been able to build over the years to really turn the ship to where you are now?
Yeah. It's funny. Getting the position, like, obviously, that was always a goal. And I think once I accepted the position, the reality set in of, I don't know what it's like to be a head coach. Like, everything was going to be brand new. As simple as writing out a lineup card and handing in the lineup card and which copy goes to the home plate umpire, which copy goes to the other team, which copy goes to the press box. What am I supposed to do with the copy that I have? All these little things that you take for granted that I thought would be really simple became those first games. Like, hey, I'm calling my old head coach. Which copy do I give him? And he's laughing. I think just understanding the responsibilities, I think I understood the responsibilities, but the actual in practice of who you are as a head coach. I think being able to speak with, having meetings with the athletic directors and doing self-evaluations, all these things that you didn't do as an assistant. As an assistant coach, I was buried in the numbers, buried in the stats, buried in the scouting reports and, you know, recruiting and all these other things. And when it comes down to it, now I'm super fortunate that I came from a Division II school where I had a mentor that really allowed me as I was going to sit in on some meetings and be a part of everything. But at the same time, the responsibility and the weight of that responsibility is unknown until you're in it. And so coming here, I really felt, number one, the first thing that we had to do was get the people that were currently here on our side. I just felt like when you're 8-41, when obviously we played against them, and when we were, as a coach at Sonoma, we were responsible for putting quite a few of those 41 losses on them. But I think first and foremost, the whole plan was to, one, identify what the current culture was like. You see it from the outside looking in, but really take a deep dive and get to know the players that were currently here and figure out what was going on and what they needed. And I think what I really found that they really needed was trust and belief in them and create an environment where they love showing up. And I think that there's too many people in this game that think it's all about baseball and all about how prepared can we get you? Where I just think it's really about the state of mind that the team has and each individual has showing up every day. And I've never wanted to create an environment where it was fearful. I want to create an environment where there's a fear of disappointment over a fear of punishment. And I just think that, so it's where we started. And my other thought was when I first got here that the players in our program needed to have a great experience. And that, obviously, that includes some winning, right? Now, I would be naive to think that we were going to come in here and light the world on fire and win a championship after being 8-41. But I thought just showing improvement in the attitude of our players on within our campus community and within the classroom. And I think that all started by the way I treat our players and by the way our assistant coaches relate and treat our players. And ultimately, it's just built. And I think that first group, one of the things I'm most proud of is that the kids that were freshmen on the team that was 8-41 were seniors on our third year, our third team here that was 39-17, and we won our first championship. So you had a group of about 6 or 7 freshmen that saw what 8-41 was like, and I had to re-recruit all those kids. They all wanted to leave because they had a horrible experience, to bringing them back to I have a picture here in my office right up here that there's a big dog pile and I get to see him every single day. And so I think when you talk about moving forward and how have we gotten to the point that we're at right now, I truly believe it's the way our players are treated. And it's not that you're catering to everything that they do, because players want discipline and they want structure and they want to be held accountable. But I think you could do that in a way that's not demeaning and demoralizing. And I think we're all in it together. I use the saying all the time that there's no line in the sand here. It's not players on one side and coaches on the other. We're all in it together. We need to create an environment that it feels that way. And ultimately, the reason why we're in the position we are now, and hopefully in the next few years playing for national championship, is the experience that our players have, because they recruit our program better than I'll ever recruit our program. So you could have a great team, but if your players don't respect you or didn't like the experience, that's the experience that they had, and that's the experience that they share with other people. So I just feel like if we could create an environment where our players get to experience us in a way that's enjoyable, competitive, exciting, emotional, all those things, it bodes well for future teams. So these guys have a great experience. They're going to keep telling their friends.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's a great way to articulate it there at the end, that our players are going to recruit the program better than I'm ever going to be able to. And I think that is something in any organization, when people come to visit, what's the vibe they're getting, not from the people putting the show on, but the people that are living it out every single day. So I love that. Jeez. I want to follow up in a couple different ways, and I'm trying to keep my attention issues from getting the best of me here, because talking about that in my normal sequence of questioning, I'm going to pivot here because I want to know, and I need you to couch this for the audience because I don't have all the details, but my understanding, baseball is not a fully funded sport. You have to split scholarships at the Division I level. I think they get like 12 to go with a 40-player roster. I don't know what your level is, but I'm curious two things. One, how do you recruit given that's the landscape? Now, I do know that it's the landscape for everybody. It's not like basketball necessarily, where you guys might not be fully funded and Humboldt State is, and it's a whole different beast. But what's that recruiting where it's not necessarily scholarship play for everyone, right? Probably the majority of your roster isn't receiving any athletic grants and aids. And then the second piece of that, with the Wild West of the transfer portal, how is that impacting what you do? And what have you figured out, or what are you in the process of figuring out of how to utilize that with the new world that we're in?
Yeah, start off at the beginning. Yes, we are not fully funded, and most of the schools in the CCAA are not fully funded, especially from a baseball standpoint. It is not equal. There is a discrepancy amongst teams. The NCAA says that we could give out 9 scholarships, right? Now, 9 full grant and aid at our school is probably in the $21,000 to $23,000 range. So if you multiply that times 9, you're looking at $180,000 to $190,000, right? $200,000 to maybe fully fund your program. Yeah, we're not close to that. But now some of these teams that are in the College World Series in the Midwest or back East and some of these other conferences, they are, and they're able to give out those full 9. For us, we've gotten a little bit better each year. I would say when we won our first championship in 2013, I would say we were bottom third in the league in total scholarship dollars. I think in 18, when we won our second, we're probably pushing ourselves up more to the middle of the pack. And I think we're probably towards the top of the middle of the pack now, if that makes sense. There's probably about 4 or 5 teams that are ahead of us. I also don't think that baseball is as demanding of a scholarship sport as, say, basketball and some of these other sports, because we do have larger rosters and you have a lot of people on there. We divvy out our scholarship quite a bit. There's a lot of $1,000, $2,500, some $5,000 scholarships. I think sometimes your money goes to pitching quite often. That's where it's just hard to land some really quality arms because there's a lot of competition to get those people. Now, with that said, I think you have to really do a lot of, you have to just be active and talk to people and be able to ask tough questions to families, right, about their finances and where they're at. And obviously someone that qualifies for some form of federal aid money, you would also qualify for some stateside money, which could ultimately really help us. And I think one of the keys to our place is to find a couple people that would qualify for stateside money, Pell Grant money, and then your scholarship dollars go a little bit further there. I think the challenging part is that middle class family where they probably make a little bit too much money to qualify for federal aid, but they don't make enough to really afford college. And I just have a hard time recruiting kids and having them take out a ton of student loans. And ultimately my kind of thoughts are, if I could have someone come to school here and leave with a degree and have under $20,000 or under $15,000 in debt, we could probably make that work. Anybody that wants to go to school for free and have everything paid for, they should have probably played basketball or golf or something like that. Baseball is going to be a little bit of a challenge. Even the highest scholarship on our team is probably maybe covering 50%. And that's, it just doesn't do it much.
And that's pretty standard across baseball, Division One to Division Three. It's just like, well, you're not getting a full scholarship in baseball.
In Division One, they used to be able to do where they'd give a bunch of people some money, but now it's everyone on a Division One roster has to have 25%. Now, so they can, but still 25%. And if you're going to a private school, it's costing you $60,000. It's really not that much. And the same thing, and I think that's another thing that gets me into the recruiting side of things, where if I'm recruiting someone that is being recruited by, say, a USF or St. Mary's or a private school, even a Division II private school, where they're saying, coach, they're giving me $25,000. It's like, I could give you $1,000 and it's going to be cheaper to come to school here. I can give you no money and it's cheaper to come to school here. So I think over the years you've developed certain things, and or someone's getting a big scholarship to a school out of state, where I'd say if I could show you that it's going to be cheaper to come to school here on no money than it is to go to Rogers State in Oklahoma, where how often are you coming home for the holidays? You're coming home for Thanksgiving, you're coming home for Christmas, someone coming out to see you, you start adding up all these plane flights. And so there's, you have to really do your research. And then in terms of the transfer portal, the last few years, it's hurt Division II, right? Where a few years prior, if someone went in the transfer portal, you didn't have the transfer exception from Division I to Division I. So these kids were going in the transfer portal looking to go play and have opportunities in Division II. Now you're looking at, if I pulled up the transfer portal right now, there's going to be 100 names just from today, just in baseball. And if I did it another 3 or 4 hours from now, there's another 100 names. And so it's almost to the point now in the transfer portal that you have to have a previous relationship, whether you've recruited them prior or you know their coaches. And then once they're in there, there's a way to get steered to you, or maybe they know someone within your program. Now, also at the same time, one of the benefits of us having back-to-back really good seasons, that people that are leaving Division One that maybe don't have Division One eligibility are looking towards some of the top Division Two teams. If I'm being really honest, it's just created a little more work.
Yeah, and I ask because the way it was framed to me recently was that, this is going to sound awful, so I'm going to let you couch it after I say okay. It, but Division Two has basically become the junior college of college athletics, because you go there for a year, you have a great year, and boom, you're gone, even though that's not what it was designed to do, but that's what the transfer portal has now unintentionally created. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, for sure. And I would say yes and no. I think if anything, the mid-majors have probably suffered more than Division II. So those mid-major universities where you get the player of the year at a Nickel State or a Wright State, or, well, all of a sudden, like LSU is not looking at junior colleges anymore, you know, very rarely. Some of these Power Five conferences, instead of going to the junior college where, hey, this guy's a junior college All-American, he's not playing against the same competition that a mid-major is playing against. But now you get a mid-major All-American, like that guy could go into LSU or go into Alabama and be a star. For us, we haven't lost anybody. I've got the 2-time reigning player of the year in our conference.
But let's talk about that. Let me interrupt you.
Yeah.
You haven't lost anybody. Why do you think that's the case? And can you talk about that in regards to your program? And what are the best things that you do that makes people want to stay? Winning helps, but there's more to it than that. What's the best thing you do in your program that's leading to people wanting to stay? Because the outside conditions are now such that they don't have to, where before it was like, if I transfer, there's penalties, and now it's the Wild West, but people are still staying. So why is that?
Yeah, I don't know if I could actually give you a concrete one thing answer. My wholehearted belief, truth is, I think it's the way that our players are treated, the experience that they have with us, right? I do. I say it all the time, and I don't know how accurate it is, and I don't know how many people believe. I just think that I'm a different coach than most people are going to play for, and I instruct our assistant coaches to coach in a, and have a certain attitude and a certain
affect.
Yeah. And just have some patience and have some fight the urge to see yourself as the top authority. And I think assistant coaches come in and want to tell you what to do and how to do it. And because a lot of them are young and maybe they've been coached that way. And it's not the way I want to coach our team.
So let's talk about that. So what are the specifics? Because part of this podcast is providing mentorship to others. What are the things that you are wholeheartedly committed to that makes you different than most people you play for? What are those things?
Yeah, I don't know if it's anything that I could quantify or put in writing. I think it's our personality. It's our perception or our outlook on who we are. And I think every day, like some things that I tell our team all the time. Number one, there should never be a day that you're fearful of showing up to practice, right? My job is to make practice enjoyable, competitive, exciting. And I love my job. So if I show up every day and create an environment where they love showing up, they're treated well, we laugh, we have fun. But at the same time, I have really good coaches that are knowledgeable, that have played a long time, myself included, that I think there's a baseball respect factor that goes along with it. So when you combine the knowledge of the game, which every coach has knowledge of the game, but you combine that with a effective communication strategy and create an environment, like I said, where these guys love showing up. I hope that every day it's like, what are we going to do today? Like one of my favorite things, coach, what do we got today, man? And it's, you're going to find out, but it's always going to be some sort of competitive situation. And there's times I remember as an assistant coach when I was a lot younger and was a little more active, we'd play this double play game where myself and our assistant coach would soft toss hitting balls to our infielders. And we play a game where first team to turn 21 double plays wins. Now I'm also a horrible umpire in a deliberate manner, right? And there's certain things that you get to coach while get to have our energy levels up and excitement. And there's certain things you could teach. It's hard to explain it through this, but my point is we're playing for something. Doesn't have to be anything major, but sometimes it's you're playing for a Gatorade, right? And it's amazing what kind of practice you're going to get out of people playing for a 99-cent Gatorade. And I think it stems back to my high school playing days. We had a 7-Eleven right down the street from our high school. And whoever made the best play in practice got to meet Coach Worley up at 7-Eleven. He bought you a Big Gulp. It stayed with me this whole time because we would practice at a pace that you would play in games, and it wasn't forced. It was enjoyable. And then you got to go and get a Big Gulp if you made a great play. So little incentive things like that. And those kind of things are the way we practice. Now, getting back to why people aren't leaving, I'm hoping it's out of the fear of disappointment, right? I've gotten so close to people. I've met every single family here. I have an open door policy. I'm not going to talk about playing time with parents, but I'll talk about their kids. I think the whole idea is to be a community and be together and help develop the person. So if the parents love it, the players love it. I've had coaches in our league ask me all the time, are you afraid to send your players out to play summer ball? Because they lose players to other Division I schools. And so I've got the 2-time reigning player of the year. And you think that guy can't play at any Division I school in the country? He's probably going to get drafted here and during the draft. And kids stayed here through the pandemic, through everything.
I want to push back on that question as the intention of it. Are you worried to send them out? And it's, hold on, our job is to help these kids become the best version of themselves. And if I'm worried about that, then I'm not putting them at the center of the experience. So that question is flawed in general.
100%. Yeah. Not worried one bit. Let go. Yeah. Other people may be that way. The way I look at it too is I'm really secure in what our program does for people and who we are. And either want to be a part of it or you don't want to be a part of it. And that's okay either way, right? Yeah. If you want to be in, I want you all in. I'm going to be all in with you. If you're not, it's okay to move on and go and do what you want to do. And I just think our job is to put these kids in the position to be successful one way or another, whether it's here or moving on and moving forward. And so I'm really proud of the fact that kids don't want to leave. They like staying here. They love our program. And like you said, winning is a big factor in that. I'm sure when this program was 8-41, there was a lot of kids that wanted to leave. And I also think that it's whatever's current, right? Right now we're at the top of things. So everyone loves it. We have a year or two that aren't as successful as we had. I'm sure I'm not as good of a coach as I once was. Right?
We shall see, but let's talk about that for a second. In a small college environment, you get to spend a lot of time with the other coaches, right? CJ just popped in and said, hello, everybody. Well, you have time to go and watch what they're doing. And I'm always curious what people have learned watching other teams. And most coaches have tunnel vision on their sport, and that's where they try to study. But I'm always curious, hey, what are you learning watching Isaac coach basketball, Ryder Dre coach softball, or Jason coach golf? What are the things that you've learned over the course of your career watching other sports and other teams that have found their way into your practice and your approach?
Obviously, the games are fun to go and watch, but I think I like to see other teams practice. Like it's been a little bit since I've been able to sit in on the men's basketball practices. When Isaac first got here, I'd go down and watch them quite a bit, and I'd go up and watch Dre in softball. And I always do. I think one of the things that I really admire about Isaac, especially in a sport where you'll watch basketball head coaches like lose their mind and their shirts ripping off and they're going crazy. And Isaac is just always really calm and stoic. And I know deep down, there's no way he could be that calm on the inside. And I remember watching him coach and thinking about myself going, you know, and I get a little animated and I get really excited sometimes. And maybe that's just, I don't know what it is, but I thought that, and I've watched other coaches, not on our place, but I've watched other baseball coaches. I watched the Vandy coach the other day during Super Regionals and just seeing how calm and stoic, like he's been there and done it. And so there's things that I think we could all adjust and do. And then I watched Dre. She brings so much energy to her practices. And I think there's some similarities there with how she coaches and what I do. But I observe, and I probably spend more time watching the coaches during when I go and watch them practice or during games, just to see they handle situations. And not necessarily here on our staff, but I always felt like I was a combination of every coach that I've ever been around. And whether that's taking things that I really like and apply to what we do, and there's plenty of people that I'll never do that. And I think good, bad, or indifferent, I think it's shaped who we are. And I think we're always evolving and always changing. And I'm quite certain 5 years from now and 10 years from now, I'll have different views and different thoughts and probably be a different style of coach. Hopefully have some of these same things that are getting us to where we're going. But I think the more you're around, the more experience you have, the different wider perspective that you have.
No doubt. And on that note, how would you say your approach has evolved over the years? You say you're constantly evolving. Are there things you can point to going back to when you were assistant to when you first became a head coach to now? What's shifted? What's evolved?
Yeah, I think no doubt when I first got here and really as an assistant coach, and then maybe I touched on it earlier, but I thought it was about the baseball, right? Teaching them how to hit, teach them how to field, show them this, show them that. And yes, there's some of that to it, but I think it's far less about the baseball and far more about the attitude and the development of the person. So I'm more convinced now. I go out and see people play less now than I ever did when I first got here. I think to me, and I say it all the time, the most important thing for me now, where maybe when I was an assistant coach or when I first got here, I was going out and beating bushes and going to watch people play, thinking I was so good that I could see someone play one day and realize like that guy's either good enough or not good enough. Well, I think as you get around it long enough, you realize no one's good enough to tell someone in one day if they're good enough or not. In baseball, especially, like, if you go watch basketball, you can see a kid jump, dribble, speed. it may translate. But in baseball, you go watch a kid play and you see him strike out twice or make an error, and that's not who he is. Or you can see him homer twice, and that's not who he is. You're not going to get that every day. But I think seeing people over a extended period of time where you get to see the ebbs and flows and what their attitudes and how do they handle failure and how do they handle success and what kind of character they have with their teammates. I think now it's gotten to the point that the most important thing that we do within a recruiting standpoint is sit down and spend a day with their family, meet their parents, meet the kids, see how they interact with their brother and sister. One of the things I love is when they show up with their brother or sister and I ask them, hey, is Billy, what kind of brother is Billy? And the young sister is going to tell you exactly who he is, right? Or if you're sitting there and moms always have a ton of questions and inquisitive, thought-provoking questions, and I encourage it. And I've had a recruit in here saying, mom, just knock it off, or don't say that. Or, to be honest, I've had someone tell their mom to be quiet or shut up, and obviously I'm not coaching that kid, right? So I think that as I've gotten older, I think it's become less about the baseball and more about the people. And I think the more successful our program is, we're getting good baseball players. So now I don't have to decide between good baseball players. I have to decide between which good baseball player is a better person and has a better character, which one is better for our program. Now, even with that said, I also believe in our program and believe in the people that are here, that I have no problem taking chances on people. I think that everyone has a chance to reinvent themselves. And I also feel really strongly in the character of our program and the care that myself and our assistants and our staff within our athletic department can bring people along and make them hopefully develop the person. Now, you can't have a whole team of character flawed people because you're in big trouble. But I think giving people second chances and giving people opportunity to reinvent themselves is always a good thing as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And I love that approach and the way in which you try to see kids for who they are rather than just what they happen to do in the 30 minutes you were watching them. Let me ask this. Tim Ferriss on his podcast always talks about people learning from earlier failures in life. And he asked them, do you have a favorite failure that has been transformational in your growth as an adult, as a coach, as a leader? Are the things that you put a pin in and you're like, damn, I always go and reference that and it's shaped who I am today.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's funny. When I think of failure, I think of our immediate failures, and that's not what the question's asking for, but I can't get away from that. But I'll tell you one that I think is really, has shaped me a little bit. It's the first time I ever interviewed for a head coaching position. So 2006, I believe, 2005, 2006, maybe, I interviewed for the Cal State LA position, and I was a finalist. And to be honest with you, and so 2006, I don't know how old I would have been, 34, 35, maybe. First interview I'd ever been on. And I'm thinking, like, I'm going to get the job. I'm the guy. And I was a finalist, but they messed something up in human resources. So they had to come back. It was myself and Dave Taylor, the head coach at Chico State right now, were the two finalists. And specifically, I remember two questions by Carol Dunn. She's now retired. She was the athletic director there and really respectable athletic director. And like I said, back then, I thought it was about the baseball. And I remember two questions. One, she asked me, this job pays really well. It pays in the $140,000 range. And I'd been making $15,000, right? Maybe 20. And are you prepared for something like that? And this is going to be a big jump. And I remember thinking, like, I'm sure I could have had a better answer, but it was like, yeah, I'm ready. But I'm sure there was a better answer out there. I'm really looking forward to managing my money correctly or whatever. So that was one. I think it showed my youth or naivety. I don't know, however you want to call it. But the other one was really important. And I've shared this with a lot of our assistant coaches or people that I've coached that are moving on. She asked me if I'd ever had any violations, small, big, whether I reported them or not. And what's your answer to that? And I remember thinking, like, this is a trick question. I've had no violations. I haven't done anything wrong, which, come on, any coach out there, you know, you could send an email at the wrong time and you should self-report. Or at that time, you were only allowed to make phone calls, one phone call every 5 days to a recruit. And I'm sure I made an impermissible phone call at some point, but in my mind, the question was to get me. And so obviously I didn't get the job, but it did. It stayed with me for a long time that, especially in these interviews, be humble, be mm-hmm. honest, be revealing. Like, mm-hmm. obviously, if you stole cars and you did jail time on things, you're going to have to be honest. They're going to know about it, but you're probably not going to be the leader of men that they want you to. But when mm-hmm. you're talking about little things that you're going to, everyone makes mistakes. It's what you do and own up and how you come back from it. I've thought about that question quite a bit. I've used that to hopefully help other people. And I'm not sure if that's actually, it was definitely a failure because I didn't get it. But it has resonated with me. And I don't know if that was the actual intent of it. I'd have to think about it. Maybe I'll come back on another podcast sometime and give you a better answer for that.
The answer is what you just figured out. These are the things that have set with me. These are the things that are I think about in life in regards to how it shaped the next evolution of my journey, right? Which is when I'm in right. these interviews, like they're not trying right. to get me. They're trying to see what I'm building. Right. And I think that's a right. great lesson. And it brings me to my last question, which is also sometimes a stumper. Which is, what have you most recently changed your mind on? It doesn't have to be baseball related, but it's, I used to be over here and now I'm over here and here's why. Meaning, right? I've changed my opinion on something very intentionally based on experience, based on studies, whatever it might be. And I'm always curious what that is for people as we always try to promote continuous learning, growth mindset, things of that nature. And I'm always curious the answers I get to that.
Yeah, it's funny. As you asked the question, I was like, man, that's a tough one. But something popped in. For the longest time, I had not had, and deliberately so, not had anybody on our coaching staff that hadn't played for me at some point. So my two longstanding assistants, I coached Coach Bell in 98, 99, and 2000. Coach Peters, I coached him in 03, 04, and 05. Every year we have players that finish their playing career that have stuck on and stayed on our staff. And I don't know, I think I took pride in that for the longest time, but we've had so many people inquire about coaching with us. And for the longest time, I was telling them, you know, I appreciate it. We've got a full staff. This was the first year that I brought someone in that was outside of my coach or that didn't play for me. And it was funny how it worked out. It was someone that, the guy's name is Kramer Champlin. He worked with our pitchers this year, and he turned out to be really great with us. And I think he's going to stick with us and be around for a little bit. But he played at Arizona State, played a number of years in the Blue Jays organization. And he was coaching up in Central Washington University the last few years. But somehow he ended up in this area, has a relationship. And so he contacted me, and I said, you know what? And I tell him the story. I never had anybody that hasn't coached with me, but you know what? Why don't you come on in, spend a couple days here? And I did. I had him come in and spent probably about 2 weeks coming in the office, talking, not giving any responsibilities, not telling him he's going to coach with us. And finally, about 2 weeks in, where he showed up every day, he's, so am I part of the staff? I'm like, yeah, you've been part of the staff for about 2 weeks. What are you talking about? So it's definitely something that I wanted him to earn it, to be honest with you. And I didn't want to give him anything. And I think the hard part for me early on was, like, I have a list of head coach, assistant coach relationship things. And one of the things I always think of is I don't want a bunch of yes guys. I don't need people saying, yes, coach, we're going to do that. Right. But I sure don't need a daily battle of wits, right? And I don't need to have arguments about it in the middle of a ball game. I want to hear what you have to say. If I'm short with you or I don't use it, don't take offense and don't feel like I'm negative towards you. It's just in the heat of the moment, I'm going to move on. But there are plenty of opportunities for you to say, hey, what do you think about this? And there's times where I'm going to say, I love it and I'm going to use it. And there's going to be times where, no, I don't like it. I'm moving in a different direction. Now, don't just keep coming back and pestering me with it, because now we're going to have a problem. Like I said, he turned out to be someone that took him a little bit of time to feel like, can I say something? What should I do? But he's worked out really well for us, and I think we're going to keep him around.
Love that. So I've always said good assistant coaches can be told no 99 times and still come back with 100th suggestion. And you almost have to frame that to your point. I want dissenting opinion. And when I say no,
yeah,
there's a reason. We talk about it later, but I don't want you right. to be shut off because you got told no. It's like you got to keep coming with it. So I love exactly. the way you described that. And actually, I lied. I'm going to go one more quick one. Rich and I talk all the time about how once you are the head coach, to your point about it, I thought it was all about baseball. Like about 15% of what you actually do is coaching baseball.
The rest of it is administrative. It's managing egos. It's whatever it happens to do. Give a quick soundbite on that as we exit here for people that are getting into this thinking, oh, I can't wait to be the head coach of the basketball team because then all I get to do is basketball. And it's no, you just took all of that off your plate.
Right. Yeah, I think head coaches at the Division II level especially are everything from travel agent, academic advisor, anything you could possibly think of. We're everything here. Yes, you are not as – now, I would say this. I have made a point to make sure that baseball isn't 15% of my job, meaning if it is 15% of my job, then I'm spending a lot of hours doing other stuff as well because I'm putting a lot of time. I think that first and foremost, I need to be present for our team. I think that one of the things that is different about our place – I've never missed a practice. I'm here every single day. I'm going to see everything that they do every single day. I owe it to them. When it comes time for me to make the lineups, no one can say, Coach White was never even here. He never even saw me. Like, he didn't see my three home runs that I hit in the inter-squad games. Like, I need to be present and be here and be available for them.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, with that said, I do. I'm doing everything. I'm over the summer here when I recruit. I'm the first step for these guys, for these kids to get classes. I'm setting up their class schedule. I am doing their academic advising because they're getting admitted late to school. The difference in baseball is my recruiting is now. Like, I'm recruiting kids now through July, getting kids in at the end of July into August. All the orientations are done. Advisors are moving on to next semester. We are doing it right here and right now. And I can't make a mistake because if I make a mistake, the NCAA doesn't see me as an advisor. So I get them set up with their classes, and then the first week of school, they're getting in to see an advisor.
Yep.
I'm the housing. I'm setting who's living with who and when they're living and where they're living. It's a little bit of everything. Now, with all that said, it's what I know. I've been a Division II player. I've been a Division II assistant. I'm going to be a Division II head. I'm a Division II head coach. I'm going to be the head coach here as long as they want me. At some point, I hope they name the field after me. I'm going to retire here. I'm not going anywhere. There are a lot of people out there that are looking for the next big thing. I love what Kirby Gary always says. Let's make the big time where we're at. Yep. And we are. We're going to do something. Now, with all that said, if we win multiple national championships and we have a different president here or a different athletic director that wants to change things about everything, I would maybe look for a different challenge. But I have zero desire to go anywhere. I've got everything I need right here. And come on, I live a mile away from where I live in Monterey County. What the heck? Who wants to go anywhere else, man? Let's go.
Absolutely. It's always good when people love where they work as much as you do and as much as I do. In the 15%, you're right. And by that, you just named all the things that are on top of the baseball. And by that, when you're a young coach, right, what you're thinking about is baseball strategy. What am I going to do in this situation? What am I going to say? And you're like, I'm going to be at practice. I'm going to plan, delegate some things out, but I got to get you housing. I got to get you set up and all these things that we didn't necessarily think about when we sat in the chair. Appreciate you coming on, Coach. I'm going to let you get back to your day. Once again, great season and looking forward to coming out, watching practice.
You got it.
You have time.
This podcast was also brought to you by ttroops.com. As coaches, our inboxes get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. TeachHoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down an Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at TeachHoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.